incredibly, everyone stayed on time. So we're off to a good start here. We have probably about 10 to 15 minutes. We start a little late, but 10 or 15 minutes for people to either raise questions to the presenters, to make comments right on point to what the presenters talked about. Who wants to start? Just as you raise your hand, just stand up and or speak into the mic and tell us who you are.
Bob Yarrow from Regional Plan Association. Want to thank Mr. Professor Frug for his comments today about RPA, but point out that neither city has any kind of regional governance structure, that whether it's the 31-county tri-state region, the New York, New Jersey, Connecticut metropolitan area here, or what Peter Hall calls Roseland, the rest of southeastern England, you know, this thing that stretches from Portsmouth to Ipswich, neither place has any kind of regional governance system or any official regional plan. And there were discussions when the GLA was created about going beyond the old boundaries of the GLC, essentially the London Greenbelt, and the decision was made not to do that. London has a brilliant new plan and is working to implement it, and it's something that New Yorkers should pay attention to. We have the City Planning Commission in New York has the authority to create such a plan for the five boroughs, the analogous area in New York, and we have just chosen for almost two generations now not to use that authority. And we've been focused on, you know, a very bad case of projectitis or other things, I guess is the most charitable way of looking at it. We've had a series of, you know, large urban development projects. We have not had the kind of comprehensive vision. And we ought to look, I think, also at the process that was used to develop the London plan. It was done in about a year. It was done with a tremendous amount of public input, and it is directly tied to the people who are making development decisions and service delivery decisions in the region, or at least the strategic thinking about the future of the city. And it's something that we could learn a lot from, I think.
That's great. Jerry, any response? Or
no.
Okay, perfect. Other comments?
Is this on?
Or how do I turn it on?
It's on.
It's on? Good. I'm John Logan. I'm an urban sociologist from Brown University. It seems to me like a big question raised by several of the introductory talks is something like the impossibility of the city. My sense, of course, as an urban sociologist, I'm always looking for the problems. And the difficulties of governance when we have an irrational governmental structure, the difficulties of civility when we have such barriers between people, these are my issues too. But I want to put on the table the caveat that nevertheless, the city works. Like, we all got here today. The poorest people in the city today got up and went out, and they're doing their daily round and somehow managing. And especially as I look at issues of immigration and the incorporation of immigrants into cities around the world, and I'm studying the United States and also China, what's striking to me is that at the same time that we set up very strong barriers of inequality and division between groups, immigrants are also at the same time being integrated into the system one way or another. That is, they are finding ways to adapt and survive and manage. And if you ask the immigrant for whom I have the deepest sympathy, what are you doing here and how would you describe it? And from my perspective, I mean, how awful is the life that they are leading, and what possible future is there for their children? And this person will say, well, you know, I'm driving the taxi 20 hours a day, but I'm managing to send money to my mother and my brother, and I've brought over my cousins, and they're getting green cards. And I think maybe in 5 years we may be able to buy an apartment. You know, this is the point of view of people at the bottom, too. And I think it's the capacity, even of poor countries. In the United States, it's easier, but even in poor countries where there are these urban divisions and these problems of new groups coming into cities and managing, even there, this happens, and that's a part of the story. So the capacity of cities to incorporate people is a reality that I think we've got to keep as part of the discussion, even as we talk about the difficulties.
I want to thank you for that comment, because I couldn't help but
be struck during the presentations, whether it was about our planning, our structure, or our...
Kathy, tell us who you are.
Put it in your mouth.
Kathy Wild with the Partnership for New York City. I couldn't help but be struck by the comments, whether it was about our architecture or our structure, our governance structure, or our planning capacity, that the view of non-New Yorkers of New York is very different than those of us in New York, which is quite positive.
My name is Max Bond. I'm an architect in New York. And I think, with regard to the comment that was just made, the composition of this room... That the immigrants and the poor are integrated into the city is contradicted by the composition of the people in this room. And I say that in answer to the comment that was made just a minute ago. I think Saskia Sassen hinted at this very complex relationship between what she called the global caregivers, immigrants, poor people. I think you have to associate that with race, ethnicity, and also various, a whole range of other issues, which I don't think have become clear in some of the other discussions, and so I very much appreciated your making reference to that.
As we go forward, I think this one comment on the table about the presentations perhaps having a theme of negative
versus London.
Ron,
first, yeah. We have a sound issue for anybody who's not speaking to it off the microphone.
Yeah. Ronald Schiffman, I'm a planner at Pratt Institute. I just want to say something about some of the earlier comments. The city does work, but it could work a lot better. For the money that we invest in our health system, we don't need the infant mortality rates that we see in Harlem and other parts of the city. For the amounts that we invest in transport, we don't need to see our subway system lingering on the edge of collapse. For the money that we invest in housing, We don't have to have housing that has 20-year lives and 30-year mortgages. We could do a lot for the people that live in low-income communities. We don't have to segregate our communities and create the Venices of tomorrow in the way we address our policies of urban planning, the way we provide incentives to the private sector to build. We can get back something that really begins to lead towards a greater amount of social cohesion rather than social integration, disintegration. And I'm a New Yorker.
Two last comments, and then you're supposed to go to the break.
I'm Lee Paulson, a New Yorker that lives in London, actually. I think the comparison between the two has been very interesting, and I actually think New York does work as a city where London fails. And one of the things that I think this group should probably explore is the potential that these two cities have to actually do something. London Plan is a great thing. It's quite inspiring. But the reality is the mayor of London and the people that generate the London Plan have very little money and very, very little power to implement the London Plan. So Londoners suffer at a disproportionate rate to the way New Yorkers suffer in terms of their contribution of taxes and their way of life and things like that. So I think also if you're going to compare demographics, comparing the Upper East Side, it's probably better to compare it to South Kensington or Chelsea rather than the place in mortality rates, if you want a like-for-like comparison of how people live and the socioeconomic groups that live there. But I do think it's the ability of these cities to actually accomplish something more than just something on paper. New York's transport has its flaws, but it works. TfL is a good organization, but it's powerless to implement any new strategies. So I think that needs to be explored a little bit more.
I'm Alan Suna. I'm an architect and developer here in New York. Glad to see so many other friends from around the world here. We've talked about a lot of negative things about cities and how things could be better, but since we have so many visitors, I just want to throw out an observation for you to look at to the extent that you can while you're here in New York. It's called the Borough of Queens. And the reason I bring it up is that there are 160 different languages and an equal number of different cultural or ethnic groups that exist, coexist in a very healthy way. It has vibrant urban centers. It has problems just like every other city does. But it has a variety of things that tie all of these groups together. And one of the things that's been missing from the dialogue this morning are, we've talked about transportation. Professor Sennett, I guess, talked about, putting things on the edges of different communities. But there are other pieces of glue that hold these communities together, and I would say that those include cultural institutions, and they would include something that was disparagingly spoken about before, which is, sporting teams and things like that. And these are things to be encouraged to allow people of different cultural groups to interact with one another. They do it in a healthy way. They don't shoot at each other as they do in other parts of the world. And while you're here, take a look at the Borough of Queens because it is a wonderful example of how different cultures and different people can get along and still have a vibrant city.
Why don't we take a 10-minute break and then we'll come back for the labor market.
Yeah.